This is the Bearcast, presented by Bird, Kulch & Ford. Bird, Kulch & Ford has been in Waco since 1936. Ford is the number one selling truck in Texas 43 years running. The Bearcast is also presented by WellMed Medical Management and USMD Health System Dallas. Here's Craig Smoke and Grayson Grundhaver.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com and the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim365 YouTube page. We are live on a Tuesday at 11:15. That's where you can always catch us in action and get your first taste of the Bearcast each week. But you can also listen to us after the fact at any time on any of your favorite podcast platforms. And, of course, you can always go back to the YouTube page whenever you'd like and watch us however you'd like. But while you do, if you are on that YouTube page or wherever you are listening to your podcast, please hit that like and subscribe button or hit that nice star rating if you wouldn't mind. And speaking of star ratings, we'll be talking a little bit of recruiting on this episode. It's also a spring game episode, although not much of a spring game really in store for Baylor football this Saturday, as we will get into. But I'm Craig Smoke, joined as always by Grayson Grundhaver and Garrett Ross behind the scenes producing. We appreciate his efforts each week, as always. And Grayson, we're going to get into some Scott Drew to start things off with, because that takes precedent, especially after last week's news over everything. Baylor's longtime men's basketball coach and national champion will be sticking around Waco. Without diving too far into it, I guess let's just start by saying hello, and how are you doing this week?
I'm doing good, but that was a wild week, wasn't it, that we just kind of capped off. I mean, unreal, the amount of just traction that was on the website, conversations, Kentucky fans, Baylor fans. It was a wild ride, so I know we're going to dive into that. But in general, I mean, a really intriguing week, entertaining week, and also something that, you know, I guess we've gotten used to over the last month or so with this whole Scott Drew thing with Louisville and then Kentucky. So it's been really interesting. And then spring football, of course, continuing to have a ton of narratives and a ton of intrigue as well. So it's been a lot of fun to cover, a lot of fun to review. And now it's just kind of about, I think, looking forward into each of their respective seasons for football and basketball coming up a little ways away, but it's coming up.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything always is seemingly right around the corner. We've got a note on Big 12 Media Days as well, just to further kind of hint towards the fact that we will, sooner rather than later, be right there on the doorstep. But for right now, we can kind of take a little bit of a breath, and certainly Baylor fans and Baylor Nation, if you will, for lack of a better term, can certainly take a big sigh of relief after the news late last week that despite some pressure and some pursuit by the Kentucky Wildcats basketball program to reel in and bring in Scott Drew as their next head men's basketball coach, Drew makes the decision on Thursday, early in the morning, to stay with the Baylor Bears, despite his family having gone to visit Lexington under the cover of a Mexican restaurant, basically. Not the cover of darkness, but the cover of media darkness, thanks to Scott Drew being at a Mexican restaurant. I know had he gone to Kentucky, that would have been remembered very differently in the Baylor lore. But in fact, he is sticking around, and obviously that's monumental news. I mean, to think that we could be in here today talking about them having a coaching search right now, I just can't even imagine what that would have been like. It probably would have been good for business in some ways, just because coaching searches are, you know, traffic heavy and people get interested in those. But I don't think it would have been better than the reaction that you got with Scott Drew staying in Waco. So Kentucky pursues him. I had my sister's wedding this past week, so I missed a couple days while all this was going on, and I was checking in and out as best as I could. We were pretty dang busy, and thankfully everything went well, and that's all over. But so is this search, and fortunately, before my sister started walking down the aisle, I had the anxiety of, like, what's going to happen with Scott Drew? What are we going to be talking about when I get back? That was all taken care of because of the announcement on Thursday morning. So Kentucky has to pivot. They go Mark Pope from BYU, so a Big 12 job does get affected, and they seem to have now feel like they hit a grand slam. At the time, feel like they got, you know, rebuffed by Scott Drew. But what are your thoughts, man? It's a it's a decision in Baylor Athletics history that we might look back on for years to come, quite frankly, because he has played such a pivotal role in this school's history and sports. And clearly when you've lost to Kim Mulkey recently and your football program's kind of in a no man's land right now, to think that you might lose Scott Drew on top of that, I mean, that was scary stuff from a Baylor perspective. So how are you feeling this week compared to, I don't know, Tuesday, Wednesday, and even a little bit of Thursday last week?
I mean, it was definitely a scary time, I think. The lucky part here is, you know, having Ashley Hodge kind of be on top of everything on the site side, you know, you kind of knew the night before that he was going to end up staying at Baylor. And then, of course, it got announced by, you know, the national media the next morning. But I think we were pretty kind of caught up with everything that was happening and kind of understanding what was going on. And there's been a lot of narratives out there that the only reason he stayed is because his family wanted to stay. And I don't buy that. I think it was just that was part of it. But I think Scott Drew kind of understood, you know, the legacy part of things and the fact that his family, you know, has been here for so long and his kids have grown up here. I think all of that kind of came together and led to this decision. You know, I think that there was intrigue there because you're going to have intrigue in a blue blood. I mean, it's Kentucky. It's a job that I feel like was the job if he was going to leave Baylor. That was the one. And he ends up, you know, saying no to it and staying at Baylor and continuing to build on the success that he's had in this program. And I think it's going to do wonders for recruiting stability, which we know they've had for a long time, and that's been big, I think, in recruiting and the transfer portal as well. And now it's just kind of about looking forward, trying to build a roster for next year. But it's definitely huge. I think Baylor fans are extremely excited. I think this is one of those decisions that definitely, like you mentioned, kind of takes the pressure off of thinking about football and the troubles they had last year, takes the pressure off of thinking about a coaching search. And I think it allows you to kind of look forward with a kind of a bright take on the future of Baylor basketball.
Yeah, I mean, it's a decision for all intents and purposes that kind of anchors him to Waco for what was likely be the rest of his career.
You would think.
I mean,
yeah.
When you've turned down Louisville and Kentucky within a matter of weeks and there's other overtures that have been made over the course of time, for him to turn down Kentucky at this juncture in his career, in their program's history, that was massive news, just in general in college basketball. A lot of people not reporting on this story correctly. In this social media age, that's to be expected to some extent, but some people who consider themselves like solid media, you know, not the – there was a – I don't know, a little bit of bad information that was floating around there. And there was some really good information by Ashley Hodge, as you mentioned. So I think that premium subscribers got the bang for their buck, certainly here lately with the coverage that we had on Scott mm-hmm. Drew and just Ashley, his percentages, although they wavered depending on mm-hmm. when you were looking throughout the couple days, that should be understandable given that it was a very fluid story. I mean, one moment he's not visiting Kentucky despite reports, the next moment you're finding out no, he's not visiting Kentucky, but his wife is and his kids are and, you know, other family members, and you bring up the family aspect, and it was a very fluid story. But there was just some bad reporting on this. I feel like people trying to just throw a dart and then go, oh, I was right, and mm-hmm. you know, proclaim to be an insider when really they were just throwing darts. And and Ashley remained consistent throughout, and I really appreciate that, because that's the way that it should be, and it was done really well on our side, so I think that's something to be proud of. And yes, if you were a member of Sikkim365.com on the premium side, you knew the night before that this was the likely outcome, even though you still had to sleep on it and then wake up in the morning and things can always change. You went to bed that night feeling a little bit better about things versus what was also floating out there, you know, by quote-unquote experts or what have you, other reports. So there was a lot of just traffic going on, and thankfully for Baylor, they were able to steer clear of a, you know, a mess here at the end, and now it's hopefully a smooth road ahead and smooth sailing for Scott Drew in this program, because you don't have to go on a coaching search. Your class isn't going to fall apart, which would have been a concern. You're thinking about BJ Edgecombe and what would have happened to him and the rest of that class. He's probably at Kentucky, if you know, or he's back in the portal and looking somewhere else to go visit. And instead, now we can focus on Scott Drew's going to be here. He's going to build on what he's done. And now with that level of commitment and the ability to say, hey, I could have gone to Kentucky, but I'm going to build here. I think that only makes it more attractive to come play for Baylor basketball and exciting that you kind of have more of a feel for what the future is going to look like.
Yeah, and I think your kind of read on the false reporting is actually really important here. It felt like Kentucky media especially and national media were thinking he was going to go to Kentucky and that there were all these reasons why he was going to, and then the moment that he decided he wasn't going to, it was just like all the blame was put on, oh, just his family was the only reason he didn't go to Kentucky, which I felt was just completely ridiculous. That is not the only reason, but it was a way for, you know, a program like Kentucky to say, oh, you know, this is what happened. This is the only reason that it happened. And, you know, I think Kentucky fans are pretty disappointed in the hire that they ended up getting with Mark Pope. And honestly, when you kind of look through the guys that were at the top of their list, when you look at, you know, Dan Hurley and Scott Drew and Billy Donovan, it is kind of, I would say, pretty disappointing in what they ended up with. But I think in general, you know, that false reporting that you mentioned, the fact that a lot of people were just saying, okay, he's going, VJ Edgecombe is going to Kentucky, like all these
things.
There's
a press conference announced. Yeah. That's not announced, but just I mean, like, wild. Come on, that's just straight up
just
not
lies.
True.
Yeah. There were just lies thrown out there, darts thrown out, like you mentioned, and then it ends up, hey, you know what? He's just staying in at Baylor. He's staying in Waco, and that's what happened. And so, at the end of the day, Baylor did hold off a big push from Kentucky, and I think it's a huge sign of where Baylor is at as a program, where Baylor is at NIL wise. And where Baylor is at winning-wise. Because you can tell me Kentucky's the better job just on paper. It is. I would agree with that. If Scott Drew had been at Baylor for like 1 year, would he have gone to Kentucky? I think there's a good chance that he would have. But I think at this very moment, Scott Drew looking at both situations, I think he feels like he can win at Baylor just as much as he can win at Kentucky. And so for that reason, I think he felt like, hey, I can stay at Baylor and win just as much.
It's his program, man, yeah. And it's more so now than it was before, and that's because of the next layer of commitment that he's seemingly now added on to this program that he's built from scratch. And so now that will continue on, that build of this basketball program, and with a new level of kind of security behind it now because he's suddenly spurned two major basketball schools, and that only you would think strengthens just the perception of Baylor as a program. So new arena,
that's Baylor's commitment in him has been huge too.
Oh yeah, Mac, for sure.
Mac keeping Scott, that's a big deal, and one's going to mention that, but that is a big deal.
No, there were some people ready to have heads roll if he would have left, and that's understandable to some extent. But also, I think in this case, it's, you know, it's one thing if you want to bring up how the Mulkey situation ended, but this one in particular, I mean, this would have been nothing more than Scott just pursuing a dream of going to coach at a Blue Blood. I mean, it wouldn't have been like Baylor didn't do this. No, they literally did everything. Yeah. Definitely a big assist goes to Scott Drew's family, in particular his wife from the sounds of it. Just rather be here in Waco. And, you know, I don't care how people want to spin that on the Kentucky side. If they want, oh, well, it's the wife, man. Who cares? How many times do you think the decision's made by the wife? A lot, if not more than it's made by the coach in any sport, in pro or college, probably in some cases, but certainly in the college ranks, the wife has a lot of say. Do we not remember Terry Saban and her pull on things, or any number of other coaches' wives? I think it's always been a part of the game, so to speak, and what the family wants is a part of coaching searches and the history of coaching searches. When you learn about college sports and how searches work, that's part of the story.
Job searches in general, it's not even just college coaching.
Yeah,
but
I mean, you're right. Yeah. In jobs in general, the family has a big say. If you're moving across the country or what have you, yes, I'm focusing more on this particular avenue, but you're absolutely right. I mean, it goes that way across the board. So, yeah, that's just an attempt to try and just soften the blow. Mm-hmm. I will slightly disagree with you on one thing, though. I think you were right on the initial reaction to Mark Pope by Kentucky fans, but I think after he rolled out the nostalgia train with the national championship trophy and the old team getting off the bus at his press conference and just listening to Kentucky reporters, I think he's won them over now, and now that's like, if Scott Drew would have gone there, it would have been a big deal. They would have been very excited. But now they've got like one of theirs, you know, one of their guys, and one of their guys that won a national championship. And I think he's gotten their mojo back in a very quick amount of time because he's a Kentucky guy. So I say that just to say there's obviously a level of disappointment in not getting Scott Drew or Danny Hurley, which was clearly a huge target of theirs, and he just, you know, why leave the back-to-back national championship program he's built or is in command of and helped build to a different degree? And there were other names scattered across. But, yeah, the initial reaction to Mark Pope was a little eh, but now I think he's won them over in full, and he can do no wrong until the basketball games start off. So everybody wins. Everybody wins in the long run, but Scott Drew did turn down Kentucky, just to be very clear there. So here we are, and not having to start a coaching search conversation. Grant McCaslin, Jerome Tang, all the familiar faces that would have been mentioned, John Jacobs, and any number of new names that would have been thrown into the ringer as well. We don't have to worry about that. And as a person who greatly respects Scott Drew, I'm glad that we get to continue to cover him and this program, and excited to see what the future holds. And speaking of the future, now that all of that drama is seemingly out of the way, there were some decisions that were going on, and some of them leading people who were looking for clues anywhere to think, oh, Scott Drew's leaving, or Scott Drew's this or that. Well, a couple of players announced their declaration for the NBA draft last week, and not a surprise, Grayson, that it was the two guys who have long been suspected could go and test the draft waters. Eve Missy has declared for the NBA draft, and Jacoby Walter yesterday officially declaring for the NBA draft, both one and done in college and in Waco. And we will see what the future holds for both. Walter has more of the mock draft love that I've seen over the course of time. I've seen both. Kind of depends on where you look and when you've looked. But those are two spots that we know of for sure now are going to have to be filled, and they will get to work on that. But, you know, Scott Drew will be the man dictating how they go and replace those roster spots.
Right. And, I mean, both those guys had really, really good seasons and were extremely impactful on Baylor's success this year. I think Jacoby Walter is going to be a lottery pick. I'm not going to say that it's for sure 100%, but every mock I see, he's right in that kind of 8 to 15 range. So I do think he's going to end up being a lottery pick there. Eves Misi, I think he's going to end up being just one of those guys that ends up getting taken around that, you know, 11, 12. So kind of at the back end of the lottery, just because someone's going to get so intrigued by his athleticism, his length, his ability on defense. So Baylor could have two lottery picks this year. It's very, very possible that happens. Also, the other news that I know people were kind of trying to figure out, oh, does this mean Scott Drew is leaving, which I felt like was kind of funny. But Caleb Lohner entered the transfer portal, so he won't be at Baylor either. So there's another spot for Baylor to fill. And then you're kind of just waiting on, you know, Jalen Bridges' decision, I think, is kind of going to be a big one with how they address the transfer portal. But I think in general, that's kind of where Baylor is sitting now. And I think they're sitting in a pretty good spot to really be able to go out, attack the transfer portal. You're bringing in an elite recruiting class with VJ Edgecombe, Rob Wright, and Jason Asamoah. And now you're just kind of trying to fill out the roster with guys with more experience and more, more proven commodities in college basketball. And I think that's what Scott Drew and the staff are working on now. And they got a lot of interesting targets, I would say.
Yeah, so a massive question answered at the top, but now three roster questions answered, as in there's three more scholarships now available that I'm sure they were expecting to some extent. You knew with both of the freshmen, Walter and Missy, that the NBA draft was a strong possibility. And then Lohner, based on the last couple of years, not a surprise that he would decide to go and use his extra year, or, you know, his remaining year to go and seek more playing time elsewhere. Never really clicked here. I know towards the end of last year, he finally had like a couple of moments that people were like, oh, there you go. Yeah,
he had a couple moments this year.
Yeah, but yeah. But it's kind of more towards the end. And it was just not, a situation where you're going to view that as just some massive loss, respectfully. And for him, hey, good luck to you, and thanks for what you did, and thanks for being around, and hopefully you find a good landing spot. But you mentioned the NBA draft lottery. I have seen Walter in some of those mock drafts. Haven't looked at one all that much lately, but just sort of the ones that were coming out initially. I had Walter as a lottery pick. We'll talk about this more as the draft draws closer in a couple of months, but Baylor is in search of their fourth straight year with a lottery pick that started back in 2021 with Davion Mitchell, and then in 22 you had Jeremy Sohan, and then last year Keontae George. So they're looking to get a top 16 pick. Yeah, lottery's 1 through 14, so
Just outside.
Just outside.
Yeah. He should have been.
Top 15-ish picks 4 years in a row is what they're eyeing. I forgot. Yeah, 14's like the cutoff for the lottery. But you get the gist of what I'm saying here. It's been a good run. It's been a historic run. And now looking for their fourth straight first-round pick. There you go. A little bit more on the nose. And that is likely to happen with Jacoby Walter at bare minimum, and maybe even Eve Missy as well.
Correct. And I think they're both going to go first round for sure. Now it's just a matter of can they sneak into the lottery or sneak into the top 16. And I know some people don't feel like that's a big deal, but when it comes to recruiting, it is absolutely a big deal that you're continuing to, you know, churn out these guys who end up being, you know, these lottery type picks after being high-end recruits coming out of high school. That's a big deal. I'll also say I saw a mock draft recently that had Jalen Bridges going in the first round. And that would be really interesting if Baylor is able to have three first round picks. That would be a quite fascinating. I'm not sure if that'll happen, but potentially. And Bridges could come back. I also forgot to mention, I feel like it's important to just mention this, is Everyday John also announced that he's going to the NBA draft. So there's another name who won't be on the roster next year. You know, really kind of tough to look back on his career. He was so just dominant in 2021, and 2022 was very good too until he got hurt. So it's kind of been a sad run for him, but he's been a great Baylor Bear.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because there's just so much news. It kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And I think that one especially, as I saw it and it didn't really register because it was like, oh, of course he's leaving. And, you know, I don't know what his prospects look like on the next level. Like, I mean, certainly he can play overseas somewhere. I don't know NBA wise how he'll be viewed, but a fan favorite for the Baylor folks out there after these last few years and just the struggles that he's had, but the great moments he also was a part of. And so, yes, absolutely. Good luck to Jonathan Chamwichachua and Caleb Lohner as well, but Everyday John, as you said, was certainly a guy that was easy to wrap your arms around. So, yes, another roster spot that is open. So there's four guys off of last year's team that we now know will be moving on in some capacity, and there are four on their way in with the 2024 class. You've got VJ Edgecombe, Jason Asamoda, Rob Wright, and then Noah Boyed that are all, you know, geared up and ready to hit Waco, hopefully running in stride and ready to rock coming up next season. But there is clarity now for the program, and last week there was not much of that. There was a big just question mark kind of looming out there because there was the very, very real possibility that Scott Drew was going to be heading to Lexington, and that was just a whole ordeal that we can look back on now and laugh, whether it's the Mika Sita picture or the plane you know, trip that wasn't him, but in fact was his family, and then the family's role in deciding, you know, his wife might have her jersey hung from the rafters, you know, depending on what happens in the next few years because of the role played there. But just in general, it was a massive week for Baylor men's basketball. I'm sure Ashley Hodge, who deserves a good pat on the back, is breathing a big sigh of relief, and Kendall, and it's been fun to read their thoughts and look forward to reading more about how, you know, Drew can utilize this and almost weaponize it of the attention that he drew. And then also, as I mentioned, bringing in all these great young players. So should be an interesting offseason for this program. Anything else basketball-wise?
Yeah, quickly, there is a visitor this week. Charlotte kind of wing-type prospect Igor Milicic is expected to take an official visit to Baylor. The other schools involved, I believe, are Nebraska and Tennessee. We'll see if other schools get involved as well. 6'10", 225 pounds, kind of a big wing slash guard type, kind of in the mold of a Jalen Bridges. This would probably be one of those, if you don't believe Jalen is coming back, you would try to add a guy like this. But averaged 13 points per game, a little over 8 rebounds, shot 38% from three, 82% from the free throw line. Really, really good offense player, a really big wing, a guy that can really shoot the basketball as well, and a decent defender. Not great, but decent, decent enough to definitely be a starter for the Bears next year. He would be a really, really nice addition if they're able to land him this week. There's a few other names that I know we've mentioned. Cliff Omaruyi out of Rutgers is kind of the biggest name that I've been looking at. Baylor really needs a center after losing Eves Misi, and I know you got Josh O, but I think Josh O is still probably more in the role of being your backup center as opposed to your starter. Cliff is a beast defensively there at Rutgers, averaged 3 blocks per game, would just bring a veteran mentality, a physical presence, and very good athleticism to Baylor's team at the center position. Outside of that, you know, they're looking at a bunch of guards. I think they're definitely going to add a guard or two. Maybe an interesting name that entered, I think, this week was Ryland Griffin, the wing out of Alabama. He's like 6'6", played high school ball in Texas. Really, really good player. A guy who came off the bench for them but had really, really good moments in the tournament. He averaged 11 points per game, shot 39% from the three-point line, 81% from the free throw line. So another really, really good prospect who I think Baylor is definitely looking at as well. But again, wing, guard, center, and then probably a best available is kind of what we're looking at for Baylor at this moment. And a lot of good names, I would say, out there, and more names that could potentially be added in the near future.
So the transfer portal is active in football now as well, and we will get to that in just a moment. But certainly the portal and recruiting and just you know, whatever else you want to throw into the mix, it's full on off season for basketball now, and we can all fully focus on those moves as opposed to, you know, the others that we were just referring to the last 20 minutes or so, that there was a very real chance we were talking about a coaching search today there for moments in time last week. And so instead, it's on to the roster rebuild or reload. And, you know, I guess, you know, it's knocking out some of the questions that linger as far as, like, what's the staff look like? Are there any tweaks? Are there, you know, is anybody else going to move on at some point? Kind of how do you address the John Jakes departure? All that still to come in time, but we now have a solid base of which to operate from, and it's the base that Baylor basketball has been operating from for the last two decades, and it will remain that way. So that is very exciting. Congratulations to Scott Drew on the love that he received last week and the attention that's definitely warranted. If the message gets to him, we're thrilled to still be covering his basketball program. Meanwhile, the football spring game is coming up this week. It is the last week of spring drills. There are two practices that we'll be allowed to go and check out. That includes today on a Tuesday and also on Thursday. And then on Saturday, it will be the green and gold game. But before we get into kind of the details of, I guess, maybe what you've noticed out at practice, I was very limited last week because of the family commitments. So didn't have a lot that I took away from last week so much. I'll be fully locked in once again now this week. But let's knock out the details about the green and gold game just so before we like dive into it, people, why is there not like a preview of sorts? And we can get into that, but this is not going to be your typical spring game. This is not one of those where it's going to be like the green team led by Daquan Finn and the gold team led by Sawyer Robertson, and it's going to be like an actual game like you've seen in some years past. The green and gold game is going to be a traditional practice. Baylor announcing that through a press release. 12 p.m. the start time on Saturday at McLean Stadium. Admission is free. Gates open at 11. Parking free. So, I mean, just come on out and watch a football practice if you're interested in seeing what the Bears look like at this moment in time. But they are going to close with a traditional practice. There will be limited team competition periods during the event. And the structure of the event will be geared more towards a productive practice. You cannot watch this anywhere. They will not broadcast it. They will not stream it. It will just be a practice behind closed doors unless you're there at McLean Stadium is what it will be. The offense, though, will wear green. The defense will wear gold, so you will have that green versus gold aspect. But that's about as much as it sounds like they're going to mix it up as far as a competition standpoint. They also made note in the press release that you'll be able to see some of the kind of tweaks they've made to McLean Stadium. That will be one of the things that you can check out. There's a new video board, and there's also going to be other, as they call it, ongoing visual renovation efforts. But the video board structure will not be the permanent one that you're going to see next season because they're in the process of, you know, changing that up. So there will be some, there are a lot of construction going on, like throughout the team and throughout the stadium and just throughout the program right now. And as you'll look across the river, if you haven't been out there, you'll see the construction of the Fudge Football Center that is very much in progress right now as well. So a lot of in progress going on, and that will include our look at the green and gold game, more of a peek into practice to wrap up the 15 spring sessions as opposed to your traditional kind of full-on scrimmage that we've become accustomed to seeing in most spring settings. So they're going to have the cook-off for alumni and things like that as well. If you're interested, you can check out the website. And I know that they announced Mo Porter, former offensive lineman, softball head coach, Glenn Moore, Pete Fredenberg, a former Baylor assistant and a UMHB head coach. They'll all be the judges for that alumni cook-off. So there'll be things like that as well. The green and gold game, I know you're disappointed. I can tell by your face and just sort of your reaction. And I saw that from some others. But they attribute this to, quite frankly, Grayson health. And also, you know, they're not a big draw right now. It's not like ESPN's banging on their door like, we got to show your spring game. You're in hot demand. They're not. They're probably at their lowest sort of demand, I would think, in the last few years as far as drawing eyeballs. But also in this transfer portal era, it's just sort of like gearing up and, I guess, not really knowing what's in store. I don't know, but they're just sort of treating this like a practice. So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it is disappointing. And I think for fans to not be able to watch from home the spring game is pretty disappointing. I think we've seen that reaction on the website. A lot of people wondering why this is happening. And I know you mentioned some of the reasons why. But in general, schools across the country are having their spring game. So I don't quite know why you can't have one. We'll see how much scrimmaging they do. That could change my opinion on it. But based on this, I mean, if it's just going to be a normal practice, yeah, it'll be exciting to be out there. And I think fans will be excited to watch them practice. But I think in general, everyone kind of goes out there to see, okay, you know, who's starting, who's playing against who looks good, you know, against the ones or against the twos. And you kind of get an idea of what the team, maybe somewhat an idea of what the team is going to look like. And I mean, the last couple years, Baylor's made their starting quarterback decision right after the spring game. So I guess that seems like it's probably not going to happen this year, based on the format and based on kind of what just my take on it, my read on it at this moment. So, yeah, we might not get a ton of answers from this. I think it'll be fun to be out there and just kind of, you know, see what's going on, see more practice, see more guys get reps, and see more guys just kind of, you know, compete. So that'll be nice. But I do think in general it is a little bit disappointing.
I wonder, too, about, like, health being involved here, having the full arsenal of guys to play a full-on game. I think that might, especially when you think about the offensive line, that's where I see this as possibly being some of the reasoning for that, is maybe you're thin in some areas and you just don't have the capabilities to go full-blown green versus gold. I know it's disappointing. I mean, I read some of those reactions as well. You know, at the same time, it's not like that's an event where you walk away and you're just like blown away, but I know people want to get a glimpse into it. So the no broadcasting thing, I'd be curious to know more of the reasoning behind that, because we have seen others broadcast in the past and others being broadcast right now, as spring games have kind of come and gone the last few weeks. But certainly I can understand the format if there is concerns about health, or, you know, are guys that we're not aware of, like, in the portal now that aren't going to be, you know what I mean? Like, there's questions we may not know the answers to. We'll know more on Saturday, because if there are guys missing because they're deciding to go into the portal, we'll find that out. But health for sure is one reason I don't think anybody could debate on why you might need to do that. So we'll see, depending on who's out there. But we have heard throughout spring, defensive lines shortchanged right now, offensive lines shortchanged right now. And that's a pretty good starting point to kind of be behind the eight ball a little bit. So, I'm looking forward to seeing it, just putting kind of a bow on this portion, because that means we're just one step closer to the rest of what's upcoming. But it is something where you have seen it when it's big and grand and kind of made a big deal out of, and this is like the complete opposite of that. This is like just a practice, basically. Yeah. But you can come and watch if you would like on Saturday at McLean Stadium, but that will be your only way to check out Baylor football remaining this spring. So in terms of the green and gold game itself, I know all eyes will be on the quarterbacks. I would imagine we'll probably hear an announcement of some sort, you would think, relatively soon afterwards, because that's just sort of been the way things have gone these last few years. Perhaps not, although if not, that it's going to lead to a very interesting stretch of weeks and months of the offseason where we're debating Sawyer Robertson and Daquan Finn. So that's, I think, the big decision everybody's waiting to hear about. And if there isn't a decision made, well, that in itself, the answer from Dave Aranda will be interesting if that is the decision as well. But I'm imagining that's part of what you're going to be looking at. What else are you looking forward to just trying to, I guess, figure out this weekend based on what we'll be able to see?
I mean, at this time, I'm not sure that they're going to make a decision. Just because if you're not having a legit scrimmage, I mean, a lot of times it's been, oh, this guy just played great in this game and then a decision was made. This year, it just feels like there might not be one made because it's been kind of murky. I mean, Sir Robertson has had the edge quite a few days, but then you know Daquan Finn has had a couple days here and there, and you know what Daquan Finn can do on the field because you've seen it more during his time at Toledo. So it's just a very interesting thing, and definitely something I'm going to be keeping my eye on just to see how much of an impact this day, this one specific day, makes, and how much of an impact, you know, maybe it sways the staff to make a decision. Outside of that, you know, I'm fascinated to see the offensive line versus the defensive line, because I feel like all spring, the defensive line has won that battle. And I think we just kind of know, just based on what I've seen, the offensive line's going to need to add transfers. I don't see how you could be very comfortable with the current unit that they're throwing out there and the depth at the position. I think it's pretty clear they want to add on the defensive line too, but I feel like the offensive line is definitely going to be a priority post-spring to at least add one starter and maybe a depth guy. But outside of that, that'll be really interesting. I'm just curious to see who wins that battle. And then it's just kind of like looking around at the transfers. You know, how much of an impact are these transfers really going to make? Whether it's Ashton Hawkins, Jamal Bell, Kendrick Simpkins, Keaton Thomas. I mean, there's so many names to mention in that mix. Daquan Finn, of course. But just to see how much of an impact those guys are really making on this team. We've seen it throughout the practices this spring. But to see it kind of more in a, you know, scrimmage-ish style, I think will be really interesting to watch. But those are kind of the main areas, the main talking points. You know, newcomers, offense line versus defense line, and then the quarterback position, I think are by far the most intriguing storylines going into this, as well as watching Dave Aranda coach the defense and the linebackers. However much we get to see of that, it was going to be extremely fascinating. Now it might be a little less, but I think people will get a good idea of kind of what we've seen this spring, which has been a change in philosophy and a change in a head coach in my eyes.
Yeah, I think that's what is going to be interesting for those who haven't been able to be out at a practice, is you'll be able to see Dave Aranda running around from position group, trying to handle all of his own duties that he's got this year, from defensive play callers. They refer to him now in the press release is officially defensive play caller Dave Aranda, but also head coach and linebackers, inside linebackers coach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Collins is outside linebacker. I always like doubt myself there. But Jamar Chaney technically with the title, but Dave Aranda very much helping there as well. So if it's like the practices that we've seen, you're going to see him bouncing around even more than he typically did as a head coach, kind of rolling and then instructing much more than he would have to do in the past. So, we'll see this Saturday what Baylor football offers up, but it will be a non-traditional format, more of a practice than a actual green versus gold game. And if you want to check it out, your only option to do so is to be at McLean Stadium. Gates open at 11, free admission, all that, as I mentioned a little while ago, and they start at 12, and then that will bring a close to spring football. But meanwhile, football activity in the transfer portal starting to pick up, because the portal is back open as of today, and a lot has been made, granted, by people who stand to benefit from transfer portal craziness. They cover it for a living. This is going to be the craziest portal you've ever seen. Oh my God, just wait until Tuesday rolls around. And I've seen a few splashes here and there. Nothing that's like blown my mind so far, but the day is young. We'll see how it goes. I know we're unlikely to hear too much about any Baylor guys until after the spring game, so we have a little while to wait, and that will be the case for others who haven't finished spring. Like, there's schools that aren't done, so there's players that aren't available just yet. But in terms of the transfer portal, where's your interest level? Where's your interest level as it stands in regards to Baylor? And do you have, I'm not asking for a prediction unless you want to throw one out there, but do you have any sort of expectations for what you expect to see from a Baylor perspective when it comes to this next wave of the transfer portal.
Well, I do think this is going to be a crazy time period. I don't think that it's going to be crazier than the first wave, because the first wave is always massive.
It had all the quarterbacks.
It's going to have everyone, but this wave is going to be much more significant than it has been in the past. And I think that's the biggest thing, is that you're going to see a lot more high-profile names enter the transfer portal. A lot of those already probably have destinations kind of picked out. I think we've kind of seen that these things can move pretty quickly. For the Baylor side of things, I think it's pretty clear that they're going to add another offense lineman. They're going to add another defensive lineman, potentially an edge type as well. And then outside of that, I think it's going to be a lot of best player available types. And I don't think they're going to take like 10 guys this round. I don't see them having the roster spaces for that. But I think they could get around like five. I think that's possible and reasonable to expect, depending on the kind of attrition that we see post-spring, which I expect there to be some, and I think there needs to be some. But yeah, I think five is probably the biggest number I would go with, which maybe doesn't sound like a lot, but if you had five guys to go along with the guys that they added already during the first wave, that would be a pretty big transfer portal class, and one that I think would fill a lot of the needs that Baylor's looking for. But I think in general, again, offensive line, defensive line are the two areas of focus, the two areas that I think they're going to look to use maybe the most NIL on and really try to revamp those positions, get deeper, get more talented at both of those, and just more experienced, honestly, especially, you know, just both positions, really. Just having more experience there, more proven commodities, I think is a big deal for this team. As we've seen, the depth, you know, was a problem last year, and it's kind of been a problem this spring as well. So they're going to have to fix that. So I think that's kind of what I'm looking at transfer portal-wise. I don't think you're going to see, you know, a ton of high-profile names that Baylor's going to add, but I do think you're going to see them be in on quite a few guys that can help this roster going forward.
So best available player beyond the line is where you're looking right now, as you just mentioned, and just for those who are going to ask that question moving forward, that's going to be the main bullet point. O-line, D-line for starters, that's a given. And then beyond that, just best talent that you can go and find to fill in the rest of it seems to be the kind of focus as we get to the end of spring here, and certainly reasons to be a little bit concerned about the lines, just based on what we've heard, based on what we've seen, based on the numbers, based on you look out there to practice and that O-line suddenly looks a little thin when you don't have Kurt Daneker out there, and certainly with the attrition that the D-line faced immediately as spring ball started. I mean, talk about a warrant right out of the gates when it was announced that you got a couple of medical retirements that are suddenly throwing you for a loop when you had, you know, three nose guys, and now you're down to one.
Two.
Okay. So you had four. Yeah. So you had four. So then you have two now, as opposed to having four.
And you added Tonga. Like, they did do some stuff, but you're exactly right. The interior of the defensive line has to be addressed. Like, you got to add more guys who are 300 plus pounds. You got to find a way. And I will mention this, Craig, and we've talked about it a little bit. I think there's a chance you're going to see Baylor roll out with two defensive linemen and then two jacks a lot more than they did a year ago. So having Garmon Randolph and Steve Linton out there with a Cooper Lands and a Brendan Bett or something, you know, some combination of guys like that, I think does alleviate some concerns, but I also think it means you need to add another edge guy and you need to add another interior guy, period, because they're just light there. They're light.
Yes, they are. So that was just something that you couldn't really plan for or around. They had a couple of medical retirements, and that's just something that kind of comes with the territory. So we've known since the start of spring that was going to be a focus, but even more so now that you're at the tail end and the portal's open. Unfortunately, that's also going to be a focus for every school in America, basically, is offensive linemen and defensive linemen, especially defensive linemen that you can plug in the middle that are 300-plus pounds and that can eat the run up and do all those things. That's not a place you really want to be looking, because everybody wants one of those guys, if not a couple of those guys. So that will be a challenge, and we'll see how they are able to maneuver with that. But anything else from a football perspective, anything you noticed last week, or I guess that's worth passing along? I know we had some stuff on the website people can check out. Aranda spoke on Saturday. But anything, you know, that we haven't touched on, I suppose, that is worth passing along here.
You know, I think that the main thing that Dave Aranda kind of talked about was just, you know, kind of the vibe of the program changing a little bit. And just also he mentioned, you know, kind of his role with the linebackers as well, mentioned Matt Jones and Keaton Thomas taking a big step forward. And I feel like focusing on kind of his position is really important. They need to take a big step up there. And with him focusing on it, you really can see a path for them doing that. And you got an old guy like Matt Jones, who's been around the program for a long time. And then you have a guy like Keaton Thomas, who just has a lot of athleticism that they didn't have a year ago. And a ceiling that I feel like is very intriguing. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be very impactful and a guy that probably a lot of people notice on Saturday. And I felt like that was pretty important to mention. I know Dave Aranda, if you listen to that last interview, press conference, I would say, or post-game, post-scrimmage session, he sounded different. And I think people are kind of seeing that there's this kind of, I don't know if I'm going to say a mean streak, but definitely something has changed as far as his approach now that he's focusing on the linebackers and the defense specifically. And I think it's going to be really important for this team to have kind of that mentality going forward and changing up the things that just didn't work a year ago. And I think we're seeing improvements towards that. Outside of that, it was more of the same, right? The offensive line having kind of issues. I know he talked about them taking steps forward, but there's still issues there. And I think it's pretty obvious. We've seen it a lot. It's been mentioned a lot. And that has to change. I think we're going to see that through the transfer portal. But outside of that, those were kind of the main takeaways. Everything else was stuff we've mentioned already. The quarterbacks kind of having uneven days where it was, you know, Daquan Finn one day, Sora Robertson the next day. It's kind of been flipping and flopping for a lot of this spring, and now we're going to kind of see it all come together on Saturday and see if any decision is going to be made, because we really haven't gotten a clue from Dave Aranda as far as who is the leader outside of the fact of what, you know, I've kind of seen and gathered from the scrimmages that I feel like Sora Robertson has been a little bit better this spring so far.
So if you watched Ole Miss's spring game, and I use that term lightly, or you think of the more traditional setup, that is not what we will watch. We will see a practice to close things out on Saturday, and then if we get any answers beyond that, as far as the starting quarterback position goes, we'll be talking about that on the next episode. But for now, that's sort of where we sit with football, and I look forward to seeing some folks out there on Saturday. We will be there. Are you going to be there on Saturday?
I'll be there.
Okay,
yeah.
So we'll have a pretty full crew, I would imagine, that it's there to help pass along notes, things that are worthwhile. But it's not going to be just this big, grandiose event like you have seen at other places or at other times in years past. So that's where football is. Kind of bittersweet to be wrapping up spring ball. At the same time, like, don't want to make it bigger than it really is. Like, it is practices a few months out from the season. It's a critical time for development and just sort of fleshing out your roster and things. But it is just another kind of spot in the road that we'll be moving towards the end of, and then moving on to the next thing, which will be, as a matter of fact, the transfer portal, as we've touched on, and we know that Baylor will be very active in regards to that. But then eventually, the next big event will be the Big 12 Media Days coming up this summer in Las Vegas. And that's right, Las Vegas, as opposed to Arlington, where it's been held in years recently at AT&T Stadium, or prior to that in Frisco at the Cowboys Star facility, where we were just recently for the Big 12 Combine. Now, because of the soccer conflict with Jerry's World, they will be in Las Vegas, and also as a result of expanding west and adding teams like Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and BYU. And we have learned that Baylor will be taking part on day two. The Big 12 Media Days will be July 9th and 10th at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas, Nevada, home of the Raiders. And they will be on day two, which will be Wednesday, July the 10th. They will be one of two Texas schools, along with Houston, as TCU and Texas Tech will go on day one. But it will be Baylor, it will be Houston, it will be Kansas, West Virginia, Arizona, BYU, UCF, and Colorado. So an interesting mix of teams there. The newcomers in Arizona and Colorado, The holdovers, the newcomers from last year in Houston and BYU, and then the holdovers with Kansas and West Virginia. So a nice mix of the past, the present, and the future, I guess, if you will, of the Big 12 conference. So, yeah, Arizona, Baylor, BYU, UCF, Colorado, Houston, Kansas, and West Virginia. That is your lineup for Wednesday, July the 10th, Big 12 Media Days in Las Vegas, Nevada. So that'll be a good time. You going to find a way to make it out there for that one? Or I know it's not – I'm interested to see the media turnout because Arlington was easier for a lot of people. We could drive to that. We're not going to be able to do that this year. Others could fly in. DFW with two airports, you know, makes it pretty easy. I know Las Vegas has a very fine airport, and they're accustomed to plenty of travel, but it is a bit more of a journey for some folks out there. West Virginia, UCF in particular, really getting the longest travel here, but that's sort of the MO. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I know that we're planning on being out there. If you are, great, but I can understand where it might be a little lighter than in years past when it's been a bit more local.
Yeah, I'm still not sure if I'm going to be out there this year. It did make it so much easier when it was in Arlington. You could just drive up there. It made it a lot less complicated. So we'll see on that. I know y'all will be out there, so we'll have plenty of coverage regardless if I'm there or not. But I will definitely be tuning in, and I'm very curious to see this kind of new wave of the Big 12 adding even more schools, and a Baylor game the same day as Deion Sanders is going to be a little interesting as well, a little new.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be taking most of the headlines that day. I think Deion will have that covered, but yeah, a nice mix of the old, the new, and just all that coming together in this version of the Big 12. I don't know, what is it, Big 12, like 5.0 at this point, I think. I don't know what version we're on, but it is definitely a new one and a big one. A lot of teams now suddenly in this conference and a lot of new to kind of absorb, and so that will be a good opportunity over those 2 days to do a little bit of all that. All right, meanwhile, moving on, just to touch on spring sports quickly, the diamond sports, if you will. Baseball with a sweep of BYU this past weekend, beating the Cougars 9-2 on Thursday, 8-5 in 10 innings on Friday, and then 18-17 on Saturday. So 3-0 over the weekend for Mitch Thompson and crew. They had their midweek tilt against top 10-ish, number 11 ranked Dallas Baptist. That was canceled, but they do go 3-0, and so that puts them just a couple of games under 500 now at this point. It's 16-18 and actually one game above 500 in conference play. So they've made some strides after it got off to a really rocky start initially. Now 8-7 in the Big 12, and obviously you swept the weekend series, so you're on a three-game winning streak, bare minimum. But, good to see that. And, man, what a brutal weekend for BYU baseball, but a great weekend for Mitch Thompson and company to go ahead and grab all three of those contests.
Huge for the program, and they're 8-1 in their last 9 games. So really, really kind of hitting their stride. I will say the competition has, you know, helped that for sure. But they got to go out there and just stack wins. And that's what we've talked about. For this program, it's about stacking wins, just getting better every single day and competing. That's where this program is at for this year. It's very encouraging to see them on this run. They're now all the way up to, all the way up, but their RPI is at 116, which is far better than it has been all year long. And they're going to face a Kansas team that I think is 92nd in RPI. So another great opportunity at Baylor Ballpark to go out, win another Big 12 series, and just kind of try to maintain this momentum, because the end of the season is going to get very tough. They got series against West Virginia, TCU, Oklahoma, and UCF, and all of those programs have 20 wins already on the season. So it is going to get a lot harder, but this weekend is another opportunity for them, I believe, to go out and win a series and just try to maintain momentum as the season goes on, and you have a chance in these other matchups to try to get, you know, big series wins that could boost your RPI even more. Unfortunately for this team, it's just this one area where against schools that are ranked 51 to 100 in RPI, they're 3-12. That has to change, and it could change this weekend against Kansas. There's an opportunity here.
There is an opportunity, and they are on a good little run right now, but some of that, as you pointed out, does have to do with the competition. But can you beat the pretty good teams that are ahead? That will be the tell for Mitch Thompson and crew. But given where it started, it's been, you know, much more positive as time has kind of progressed, and certainly here of late. You mentioned the pretty impressive mark of, what, 8 wins in their last 9 games, and Levi Caraway doing a good job of covering all of the baseball side of things over on the website, Sikkim365.com. Meanwhile, softball, not a good week for them. Had a win on Tuesday against UTSA, 2-1 out in San Antonio. That had followed their weekend series victory over Texas Tech, but then, unfortunately for them, they welcomed in the best softball team in the country currently, number one Texas. And Texas acted like the number one softball team in the country. Clean sweep by the Longhorns, 14-1 in game number one on Friday. They called that one run rule 6 innings. Then a 9-6 win by UT on Saturday. And then they followed that up with a clean sweep, 9-5 victory in game number 3. So Texas with the 1-2-3, and this one, a series where game one was in Waco, and they played the latter two in Austin, but regardless, didn't matter where they played, Texas is the number one team. Them in Oklahoma, man, the Big 12 is really going to get a kick in the pants when it comes to softball next year, probably more so than maybe any other sport when you think about it, because those might be the two best softball teams in the country right now. But the Longhorns are very good. There is that. Baylor softball, though, will lick their wounds, and later on tonight they will be taking on UT Arlington at Getterman Stadium, and then will host UCF this weekend for 3 on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Overall right now, 22-17. And 5-13 in conference play. That is not what you want, but that is what is reality. So, yeah, it's been pretty brutal playing in the Big 12 this year. And those two teams that I mentioned, Oklahoma and Texas, that has been a thorn in pretty much everybody's side. So you can't really, I guess, be too down, because what were you expecting, honestly, when Texas rolled up on the schedule? But still, it didn't. Never good to get swept.
No, and I mean, they just have been really bad against the best teams in the Big 12 this year. I mean, that's kind of been the mantra, right? I think they lost, they won one against Oklahoma State, who I think is the third best team in the league, but then they're 0-6 against Oklahoma and Texas. So it's been pretty disappointing, I would say. But in again, opportunities, right? This team has struggled against the top of the league, but have great opportunities against UCF and BYU and Houston coming up for them to win some games. And they absolutely need to, because their record right now, not very good. And I don't know exactly where they're at in the tournament picture. I know they were ranked number 24 coming into this weekend, and getting swept by the number one team in the country is not going to do a ton to that. But I think they definitely are going to need more wins if they're going to make it to the NCAA tournament and actually have an opportunity in a regional.
Yeah, I haven't looked into the postseason opportunities or where that all stands. Mm-hmm. I probably need to start kind of peeling back the layers on that a little bit. But you've got Oklahoma and Texas there at the very top. They're in a battle for and they're neck and neck for best team in the country, much less best team in the Big 12. But Baylor tied at 5-13. In the Big 12 with BYU, and only Houston with a worse record in Big 12 play at 3-15. So the Bears,
and they get both those teams.
Yeah. So the Bears with an opportunity to separate themselves, but yeah, not faring very well against Oklahoma or Texas. But again, not many have this year. So we will see how they do coming up this weekend. So that's sort of where we stand with everything as of the past few days. Football green and gold coming up. Transfer portals open. There's going to be some attrition, you would imagine, kind of making itself known over the next few days. Certainly following Saturday and the days that follow that and weeks that follow that. We'll learn more about how many spots they'll potentially have, who's in, who's out, things like that. Softball and baseball roll along, and basketball with the biggest smile on his face possible after the Scott Drew news of last week, and now trying to figure out what they want to do in the transfer portal and then reworking their own roster. So a lot going on here at the tail end of the spring semester, and that will lead us on into the mailbag to close out this week's episode and start off with Scotty B., the Baylor King. He mentions You talked about this earlier, but he said, other than offensive line and defensive line, what are some other needs in the second transfer portal window? I think you touched on that a little while ago. We've let it be known and hammered it home that, yeah, those line spots are clearly the top priority. But beyond that, one more time for the people in the back, I guess.
Right. I mean, I do think those two areas are the biggest needs, and defense line does include edge rusher, so like jack position type. You know, outside of that, I really think it's more about, like we mentioned, best player available. Because could they use a safety? Maybe, but it's got to be someone that you know is a no-brainer starter. Could they use another linebacker? Maybe, but again, like, you probably need that guy to at least be guaranteed in the two deep. And then offensively, you know, maybe wide receiver, maybe if they want to add another weapon there. But again, it's got to be someone that I believe is in the two deep or a locked in starter for you to make that decision. Outside of that, they just need to address the fronts, the trenches. They absolutely got to get better there. And I simply think they need more talent and more experience at both those spots.
Scotty also says, anyways, Baylor will co-host the 25 and 26 D1 Men's National Indoor Tournament with SMU. This means that Baylor and SMU will be in the Men's National Indoor Tournament. I'm assuming soccer here?
Tennis.
Or tennis, okay.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. Okay, tennis. We'll be in the National Indoor, yeah, I guess indoor, I just automatically think of soccer. Indoor tournament for those 2 years, as well as 14 other schools who have to play themselves to be in that tournament. So, yeah, that sounds like it's good news, a nice hosting opportunity, and an automatic berth into a tournament or into the tournament is a nice thing to have as well. So thanks for mentioning that, Scotty B, as that will happened in 25 and 26, Baylor and SMU hosting the D1 Men's National Indoor Tournament. Overall, Minion, for offensive and defensive line, do you think there are or will be transfers that could bring the skill we need and be interested enough in what we have to offer to join us?
I think so. I mean, anytime you have an opportunity to pitch to a guy that you can start, I think that's a pretty good thing. Or a young guy that you're going to be in the two deep potentially start at. I think all of that is great and really important when you're trying to bring in guys from the transfer portal. Also, I know Baylor's got some room NIL wise to definitely make a few moves as well to kind of bolster what they need up front and potentially at other positions as well.
Useless Kim Degree, if you were Coach Aranda for the first 2 to 3 weeks of the season, how would you handle the quarterback competition? Does your starter have a short leash? Play two like we have seen at other schools? Go all in with one no matter what? What would you do as far as the quarterback competition goes?
I think you're going to need to pick who your quarterback is. I would probably, honestly, at this moment, I'd probably wait till the fall to announce anything. I just think that's the route they need to go this year. It just has been kind of one of those weird off seasons at the position. But once I pick a guy, that guy's definitely going to start probably the first 3 games before conference play. And if something happens, if it's just not working, then I would probably look to make that move. But not until I would let that guy play through the non-con, I think. Because he's going to play well enough against Tarleton State. Then you're going to have kind of an up-and-down potential game against Air Force. And then you'll probably definitely know what you have in that Utah game, I would think.
At this stage, I know you've made a sizable investment in Daquan Finn, but you also did in Sawyer Robertson, too, the year prior. So, yeah, he didn't have as long of a resume, so it's probably a bit weightier on the Daquan Finn side, especially the need there, like when you had to go and get him because your quarterback room was suddenly like it was Sawyer Robertson, basically,
right,
and RJ Martinez. But so I think they definitely doled out a bit more to go and get Finn, but there's an investment in both of those guys. And with Robertson, even more of a long-term I don't see the benefit of announcing it now just for the sake of doing it. If it's really close, I don't know why you would go ahead and announce it. Here's the other thing. The transfer portal is different now than when we first started looking at this. Like, Sawyer Robertson initially, if he was not named the starter, didn't really have an option because transfer portal rules lock you in. That's not the case anymore. Like, he is free to go if he was not named the starter. Yeah. Right. And yeah, so it is wide open.
But so is Finn.
But so is Finn. And so that's something that I think is a wrinkle that you kind of were able to rule out for like a half a second. Well, at least like Robertson's, you know, got to be here. Well, not now because they totally changed on that. So I don't think I don't ever think it's a good idea to not name guys just simply to like hold them down here and not lose them. But I think if it's as murky as it appears to be, that I know there's always the concern about who might transfer. I don't think you can do it based on that, but those guys are going to have options, I'm sure. But I think if you're Dave Aranda and there's not a clear leader, then there's just no benefit to announcing either guy, because if it's not clear cut, then why do it? Just to satiate fans for a half a second before they move on to the next thing that they're going to be. Right. You know what I mean? You're not going to just answer everybody's question and everybody, all right, great, it's Daquan Finn, cool, let's move on. I mean, it's still going to be a bit of a question mark. So
I do think that there is a greater chance that if you were to name Daquan Finn as your starter, that Sorah Robertson stays than if you named
Sorah Robertson.
Because Finn's got 1 year, you know, right. 1 year left. So I think that's important to mention as well. But, yeah, and I don't know. I feel like the plan is, just my mindset and read of it is like, if you start Finn this year, then you also have Sorah Robertson next year. And right. yes, you can't necessarily bank on that, but I think that makes a ton of sense for the longevity of these next 2 years. And I know that doesn't really matter because Dave Aranda's got to win this year. This program's got to win this year. But that seems like the best case scenario for everyone.
Yeah, I just don't see the benefit of announcing a guy if you're not ready to do it. And you know, again, not to do it just so that, like, you don't enter the transfer portal, but that is something to keep in mind just in general with this is Robertson isn't locked in. So that you do run the risk of whoever you announce, if you were to announce it next week, the other guy could be going. If you wait, you don't do it so that you can hold on to both, but you do have a better chance to retain them.
Right.
And you have a more time to actually let them battle it out if it is as close as it appears, and let them kind of, I don't know, have two guys trying to fight to lead to start at quarterback come fall.
And
I think
they're
would
both
be
great leaders.
Yeah, it would be far more beneficial than just like pegging a guy as the starter just to say that you did it, basically, you know? So, two leaders and competition the rest of this offseason might be the best thing rather than knowing who the guy is in mid-April. Useless Kim Degree, if you're Coach Aranda, for the first two, okay, did we already just answer this just now? How would you handle the quarterback?
Yes. Yeah, okay. One, the next one.
Yeah, and I think with that, I mean, whoever your starter is, you give them the green light and let them play and let them prove that they're the starter. And then, you know, if it's Daquan Finn, he's not looking so great a couple games in, then you pivot and you give Sawyer an opportunity. But yeah, I don't love the two quarterback play system
at all.
I don't like that. I've never been a fan of that. I don't think it's all that effective unless there's a truly super unique circumstance where you have like a Blake Belldozer type quarterback. But beyond that, I don't love the two quarterbacks. And I don't think you just go all in blindly. No, like you're the guy and you get free reign. So yeah, I think you name a starter, that guy gets his opportunity. And if he's still not looking that great a couple games in, then you got to make a pivot. And hopefully you have your full arsenal and you can have some great options based on what they have on campus right now if you need to do that. Bears 224, after reading everything regarding the QB competition as it stands, does the O-line majorly affect the competition? If so, does bad O-line edge Finn and good O-line equal – okay, does bad O-line equal edge Daquan Finn and good O-line equal edge Sawyer? Glad to see Sawyer step up, but bittersweet feeling if Sawyer is the starter since we used a lot of NIL for Finn, but that just means Sawyer is even better. Thanks, and Sikkim, Bears 224.
Right. So, I mean, as you mentioned, Baylor did use NIL on Sawyer Robertson last year, not to the extent that they used on Daquan Finn this year, but they still have invested in both. So that is important to mention, I think, when we talk about this. I do think that when you're talking about the offensive line, I think it definitely, a bad offensive line does favor Daquan Finn. We've seen that in his time at Toledo. He's gotten better and better and better at avoiding sacks. Really, really good at that. Sawyer was really bad at that last year. And part of that was due to his ankle injury at one point. But I think in general, that's not his best trait. But I also don't think a good offense line necessarily means that the edge is completely towards Sawyer, even though I do think it gives him a much better chance to be a very productive quarterback than a bad offensive line would. So again, bad offense line, I do think favors Finn, but I don't think a good one necessarily says, oh, now it's all Sawyer, because a good offense line would probably help Daquan Finn as well with his ability to run around and create plays with protection. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with that. I think that, I'm not going to pay too much attention to the offense line unless it's terrible. Because if it's terrible, you're probably going to have to go with Daquan Finn.
And finally, a New York Bear. Our front seven was weak last year. Who are the guys that are going to be the playmakers this year to the level Gabe Hall and TJ Franklin were last year or higher, which was below average for an average team in the 12?
Right. Gabe Hall and TJ Franklin were just, frankly, pretty disappointing last year.
Yeah, there's not a lot to live up to, quite frankly.
No. But if you're looking for playmakers this year, I think you're going – I'm looking at it more from guys – you know, Hall and Franklin had some production, but we were all counting on them taking this huge step forward. I think this year's team has guys that don't have a lot of production yet – but have the traits and the ceiling to actually go out and make a lot of plays. And I see a lot of guys that I really like, just some happen to be young. But if you're looking for specifics, Jackie Marshall, Cooper Lands, Brendan Bett, Trey Wilson, and Kyan Roberts-Day are the five guys that have really, really stood out to me this spring. Kyan Roberts-Day has taken a big step forward. Jackie Marshall is getting healthy. Those two guys are very athletic, very strong, very big. I think they fit kind of the profile that Baylor is looking for. Trey Wilson and Brendan Bett showed some flashes as freshmen last year. And then Cooper Lands is just a guy that I feel like is underappreciated just because of the simple fact that he's kind of playing out of position, having to play nose tackle. But he's a very good player in my eyes and a guy that's going to be very important for this team. So those five are who I'm looking at. And I'm the most excited as far as upside, I think, for Jackie Marshall and Kyan Roberts-Day.
Additionally, how would you project forward the statistical layout of our average game on offense next year? For example, 250 yards passing per game to 150 on the ground, two or three receivers in 50-yard per game category or 12-yard per catch, number of sacks, quarterback rushes given up per game relative to last year.
I mean, I do think that they're going to be far better, I think, just in general, offensively. So, I mean, 250 yards passing, I think they'll be around that, and I think they'll be around 140, 150 yards rushing as well. So those seem to be fairly good numbers, fairly good projections, I would say. Two or three wide receivers with 50 yards per game. Maybe. That's going to be tough. Yeah. I think they're going to spread it out a lot. I think Keytron Jackson will be in that group. Ashton Hawkins, maybe I can talk myself into. But I think outside of those two and maybe Monterey, I just think it's going to be spread out. So maybe two or three, sure. I don't know that I'd go higher than that, though, because I see a Hal Presley. I see a Michael Trigg. I see a Kelsey Johnson, Jamal Bell. I think it's going to spread out quite a bit outside of a couple guys that really stand out. Number of snacks, QB rushes given up per game relative to last year. I think that number is going to be a lot better, specifically if they start Daquan Finn, because he is really good at avoiding sacks, especially compared to Blake Shapen and Sora Robertson, who just could not avoid a sack last year, especially Blake Shapen. He just was not very good at that specific part of the game, and I think Finn will be a lot better at it.
I have not read much on Mississippi State this offseason. I'm curious where Blake Shapen kind of stands right now.
Yeah, he's going to start for them, it seems. It seems pretty like it's going to
lock right
in. I don't
know if I'd
be all
that excited about that. Sorry, Blake. No disrespect whatsoever. But, man, he's going to suddenly be in the SEC.
Well, yeah. Jeff Lebby, though, we'll see if he can get in protection. I mean, we've seen Shapen be good when he's got elite protection. It's just we didn't really see much elite protection ever.
Three years at least. Yeah. It's been a while. Would you agree the most likely group we can project forward from last year is the secondary, who should be slightly better outside of the star spot, improving a lot?
I think the secondary is a group that we can project to go forward, but I don't think it's the most likely. Defense, secondary, I think cornerback's going to be better, but safety, I still have some questions there. I actually think the group that we can project the most for that I think is for sure going to be better than last year is wide receiver. I don't think you can be any worse than what they were a year ago at that position. I think that position is going to take a big step forward. Defensively, I also think linebacker moving Dave Aranda to coach that position, I don't see any way that they aren't better than last year because they were really, really bad at that spot.
And that will bring a close to the mailbag this week. Thanks to New York Bear and 224 and Useless Kim Degree and Overall Minion and Scotty B for being a part of the mailbag. And that will wrap it up. And I'm sure there will be lots of questions post-Saturday's spring game, spring practice that will close their 15 practice sessions this 2024 side of things. I'm sure there will be a lot of questions whether or not they name a starting quarterback, but just depending on what we see out there. And for those that miss it, we'll try to pass along all that we can that is worthwhile information throughout the practice on Saturday, but also afterwards as well. And, of course, on this show on Tuesday of next week. But I think we're about all caught up on the news cycle, certainly with the portal now open. And then with the end of spring practice on Saturday, we start to look a little bit closer at that for Baylor moving forward, both additions and subtractions that are possible. And obviously, as we've touched on quite a bit, a lot of good news surrounding men's basketball right now, and looking forward to how their offseason rolls along. And I think combined with what Nikki Collin and the women were able to do, there's some momentum on their side of things as well, getting to the Sweet 16. So just feeling a little bit better about things. Now, if football could get on track, that would be ideal. But we will see how they close this spring practice session that, I mean, is going to be not a true indicator of what we can expect, but is a little bit of a glimpse into to what to look for moving forward in the next season. So anything before we head out here?
No, nothing really. Just be sure to check out the premium side of things, whether it's basketball or football or baseball or softball. We have you covered with all kinds of insider information and more than you could really look for about Baylor Athletics. We're really on a roll right now. It's really been exciting to see, and obviously 365 Sports as well on our YouTube channel. That's been great as well.
Yes, yeah, so if you wouldn't mind, before you leave, hit that 5-star rating if you're like on Spotify or iTunes, wherever you're listening to the podcast, or if you're on the Baylor Athletics on Sikkim 365 YouTube page, where we are live on Tuesdays at 11:15 a.m. For this, about 1 hour, 15-minute weekly episode each week. If you could hit the thumbs up button and especially hit that subscribe button to grow this channel that's directed towards the specific Baylor content, we would certainly appreciate that as well. So that'll do it for us this week. Thank you to Garrett Ross behind the scenes as always, and thank you to Grayson Grunhafer. I'm Craig Smoke, and this has been the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com.